Okay, my name is Sam. I'm an alcoholic. I grew up in a small town in North Central Massachusetts. Our house was right on Main Street, next to the Catholic Rectory. On the other side was a couple of gas stations, and then after the gas stations, the post office, and then all the stores started. The town was probably about four blocks long. Also in our backyard, the nuns' convent was back there also. So I was surrounded by the Catholic Church. Because the town was so close, I could easily walk downtown even when I was like 3 years old. Because I grew up in a large Irish Catholic family, there were seven boys, one girl. I am number four, and the next two brothers are called Dick and Harry, so there was a Tom, Dick, and Harry. So at that point, anyway, my parents had a sense of humor. When you look out the window of our house towards the rectory, the rectory and the school were back, and so you could see the church, and the church was right up to the curve, and then after that, the road turned, so it looked like the church was kind of the end of the world to me. But I have an active imagination also, which sometimes is helpful. So one of the first things I remember about alcohol, when Uncle Jimmy came to visit, I was about 2 years old. My mother had put me out under the clothesline where there was grass on a blanket, and a couple of my other brothers were out there. They were supposed to be watching me. Then Uncle Jimmy arrives, and he comes to paint the front of this two-story garage we had. I thought it was weird even then that I'd never seen Uncle Jimmy before. And Uncle Jimmy didn't have any teeth. He kind of looked like Popeye. When I asked how come we never met him, I was told because he had to go live on the farm. So Uncle Jimmy comes with a big ladder to do the painting. He goes up there and scrapes for about 20 minutes. Then he comes down and starts teaching us dirty songs. We all thought this was very funny, my mother was inside. She always wanted us being out of the house so she could clean the house or something. I don't know, when you have that many kids, you know. So he goes back up the ladder, and then he's up there acting like he's the band director. And next thing I know, Jimmy and the ladder come flying over the clothesline. He lands on the clothesline. My mother comes running out with a broom, whacks him, and chases him up the street. And it turns out that because of the charge account at the hardware paint store, Jimmy had been drinking turpentine. So, you can see it was a family disease. The other thing I remember was the first day of school. First day of school, and of course the school was right across the lawn. And in the first grade we had 44 students, and there was a nun who was about 5 feet tall and about 4 feet wide and had this wooden stick. So I, you know, had never been in the school before. So I choose to go way in the back by the window so I can look out and, I don't know, see the clouds or something. But I was also trying to, you know, figure out what you do in school and how you're supposed to act. So the next thing that happens is an empty seat next to me this little Italian kid from a rough neighborhood comes and sits down. The next thing I know, the kid talks back to the nun. Next thing I know, the nun comes back to the back of the room and whacks the kid in the back of the head with her stick. Next thing that happens is the kid, who's only about 4 or 6, gets up, slugs the nun in the nose, knocks off her white bib. The parish priest comes in and pulls the kid out on the corridor. Although when your first day at school, this was very shocking. I know I didn't speak again until third grade. And then I studied until the fourth grade. Oh, also about a week later, the kid, it was actually good writing this out. About a week later, the kid, I guess, talked his way back into school, but when he came back, he had lost all his hair and his head was all like powder. I don't know what happened. So the nun brings him to the front of the room and says, "This is what will happen if you slug any nuns. This is God punishing him," and stuff like that. So I'm like, God. So I don't know, when there were like 4 out of the 8, it wasn't bad, I guess. But then as the family got bigger, it just got weirder. And, well, I think also on my father's side, the alcohol, now I know all about how that progresses. So the supper table was always a dangerous place because, first of all, it was too small for that many kids. And the bigger ones took most of the food away from you. So if you wanted to, if they wanted something that was on your plate, they would either stab your hand with a fork or knife, or they would stick their finger up their nose and stick it in your food just to gross you up so you wouldn't want to eat it. Now my father, he would never eat with us. He always ate in the next room where there was actually a big table with, you know, sat, I don't know, 10 or 12 people. It was a big house with a, also it had a rental apartment in the back. So I would find hiding places to set up areas where no one could find me. And mostly what I did was read and make model airplanes. And because of the charge at the hardware store, I could go down and get nails or glue, anything I needed. And also, my mother was always overwhelmed, so she never knew of your home or where you were. Looking back, I realized my first addiction was comic books. I first had 1 or 2 of them. That would, within about 2 weeks, I had a pile at least 2 feet high. And so it was, that was my first escape and first addiction. You know, never having enough, always going to the drugstore waiting for them to put new ones on the rack and stuff like that. So my father was a doctor. Also, he was on the school board. He was a member of this Elks Club where he always used to hang out and couldn't, he had all these kids, but he couldn't deal with them. So he didn't come home that often. He also had his office, I don't know, about 8 blocks away in the house, and then upstairs in that house, my mother's parents and sister lived. Now my mother was from Nova Scotia, and she also had been a nurse. In fact, she was the Mayo Brothers nurse when they started the Mayo Clinic. But I think she thought it would be fun having a lot of kids. Now, I only have 1 son. I'm into quality, not quantity. Also, I've forgotten about this, but I remember as a Cub Scout, we had, you know, you had to have a den mother, and you would go over there and make crafty things and stuff like that. And their house was about 5 blocks away on the other end of town. But then I discovered that the den mother didn't have any children, and also the husband worked at the bank in town, and he was always perfectly dressed, and everything in their house was neat and in place, the opposite of my house. One day I kind of helped the den mother clean up and was the last one to leave, and I asked her if she could adopt me. She said she would ask my mother. I don't know if she ever did. I was so ashamed. I never went back. So that was my end of the Cub Scouts. Also, I had what they call an Irish twin. It means that you weren't born the same day. It means that you were born within the same 12 months. It didn't have to be the same calendar year, but the same 12 months. So we were about the same size and kind of looked alike. But back in school, he was always acting out and getting into trouble. And whenever he'd be sent to the principal, he would always give my name. Now, because of he was always a great ahead of me. Also, he was really angry, actually. But he was also very funny. So after school, my mother had signed me up for art classes at the rec center, which was a block away. And I would go there and do these great, well, she thought they were great designs and stuff. And so she would, you know, really be excited when I would bring them home and, you know, be very proud about it. Then when she left the room, my Irish twin would come in and rip him up. His name was John, but they called him the Goose because he would go around and goose people with his butt in school. I don't know. So in the my mother picked up on this weirdness between the two of us, and decided that for the 7th and 8th grade anyways, I should go to a different school. And that actually worked out for me real good. It was the smallest school. I remember there were in my class 16 or 17 girls and like 6 boys or something, you know. But got a lot of attention. And then they started this new prep school in the next town over, and I thought this is great, because even by then I knew I had to get away from my family, and I said I should go there, and this will help me get into college, and because the local high school wasn't known for prepping people for college. So I signed up, but then my Irish twin gets kicked out of the public junior high school, so they send him to the prep school. And as I remember, you know, in the car, how you have all your books in those lockers and stuff. Whenever he would open his, liquor bottles would fall out. So he one day got in a heated discussion with the Christian brother who was the principal, and punched the brother out, you know. And I was like so embarrassed, you know. Is that your brother? No, that's not my brother. So, besides just a little glitch with him in high school, I did good. I got introduced to contact sports, I hadn't thought about this, but up until then, I did sports, but like Little League Baseball, but they were all individual competitive swimming, ski racing, and but then when I went to this 4-year high school, I was still small, but I had worked on construction, for the city, and by sophomore year I had grown taller, and then was on the football team. I eventually became captain of the football team and designed all the decorations for the junior and senior prom. And I got a lot of flack for that part because it was an all-boys high school. And I had always worked summers and had saved enough money to go to college, but my father wouldn't sign the loan unless it was a Catholic college. I saw Notre Dame on TV once for a football game, and I'm like, oh, that's where I'm going. I never knew anything about the campus, never visited the campus. You know, like, now you're supposed to go and you bring your kids there and do all sorts of stuff, but never occurred to me. So I got this big trunk and put it on the train in Worcester, Mass, and went to South Bend, Indiana. Oh, and also the high school I went to was the next town owner, but the next town owner was also Fitchburg. And I never knew there was another Fitchburg until I moved here. So, the next thing that happened was once I got to college off the train, the first day we had to go to the gym and decide, did we want to be in the Army, Navy, or Air Force, ROTC. And this is kind of the beginning of the war. Vietnam, not World War II. Although I remember the end of that. I decided Navy. It was like how I made decisions. I liked the Navy uniforms better. You know, that was the only reason. You know, because I really didn't want to be in any of them. I did have a hard time in school because I was in architecture school, and most of the students, their parents were architects, and so they played. They had worked in architect's office. They knew what you're supposed to do, and all the jargon and everything else, I had no idea for about a year what the heck they were talking about. But at Christmas time, one of the rich students from Boston rented a plane, and he put the sign on the bulletin board, you can get a ride home for Christmas from him, and he paid him $20 or something. And of course, it came with 10 cases of beer. So, at that point in my life, I had never been on a plane. And of course, when we landed in Boston, my oldest brother and his wife were there, and my high school girlfriend. So they had come to meet the plane, but I just threw up all over the tarmac. I did make it through the next semester, but my mother, who was kind of the glue who held the family together when I was in college, always wrote notes. I noticed that they were kind of slowing down. You know, she would send me something about every month. Then what I didn't know is that until I got home from college that year, that she was in the hospital with leukemia. And and I was pissed because she never told me, you know. But on the other hand, she wanted me to get through college. It was an awful summer because this job I had, they couldn't hire me back for some reason. The girlfriend wanted my attention, and I just I was kind of lost and didn't want to go back to college. my youngest brother and sister finally, well, she died in early August. My youngest brother and sister didn't want me to go back. They wanted me to stay there because they knew I was one of the final members of the family. I finally realized my mother would have wanted me to go. When I got back to the campus, it all kind of hit me. I got off the train with my trunk again. But then once I got to the dorm, I couldn't get out of the bed for a couple of weeks. And they sent the priest over and sit on your bed, and I don't know. I was just, but I think I was trying to think of how I got out of it, but I think sports got me going again, because I had played on the team the freshman year, and but I think I know now I do the same thing. Well, and I'm all kind of get stuffed up with too many ideas or something. The best thing for me is to take a walk, go for a bike ride, go to the gym, walk my dog. Once I get moving, I don't know. Something got me going, which I can't remember what it was. But I did make it through the next 3 years. Well, most of them. Architecture was a 5-year course, and so middle of the fifth year, I, with some of my buddies, we went to work for this Italian architect in the desert in Arizona to build underground cities. I was out in the desert. I got bit by a rattlesnake. Was in the hospital for a week with my foot, you know, hanging to the ceiling. Had a lot of time to think about things, so I went back to South Bend and finished my thesis. What I did is I just lived in this closet for 3 months because it was upstairs in the student union and no one was there. And it was like a lot of other things that I started doing, you know, just impulsive. I would just say, oh, I'm going there, you know. So when I finished up in like October, one of the other college roommates had graduated in June or whenever graduation was, went to New Orleans, lived there, and so he wanted me to come down there, so I came down there, and, you know, I had a day job and a night job. I eventually got my own apartment. We got an apartment in the French Quarter because we were living outside New Orleans, and it was weird because the first place I, this job I had, it was like an architectural engineering firm, and they put me in this room with this older guy, and he said to me, "I hear you're from Massachusetts." And I'm like, "Yeah." And he says, "That's where that nigga over Kennedy is from," you know. And I'm like, "Really?" You know, I never had experienced this before. So we didn't talk to each other much. And I finally got a job downtown. But So then what happened, the roommate was going to get married in up near Washington, D.C., so we were kind of giving up the apartment. Meanwhile, I met this person who worked in this other architect's office, and he had just gotten back from London. He was telling me this firm really loves foreign people working in their office, and you can get to London, they'll give you a job. I'll write them a letter. So that was true about every 2.5 years. If you can get there, a different city. So London. I went to the wedding in Washington, and then I don't remember how I got to New York City, but went to, I had never been on a boat before, so I thought, if you're going to go, you might as well go by sea. So I had to go down the 42nd Street in Manhattan, get on this SS United States, the cheapest ones are the ones below water level, so you never know if it's night or day while you're on the ship if you go to your room. But then I met a gang of kids who were going to London and Paris for junior year abroad. You know, started partying with them, and then all of a sudden, the boat stopped in France first before it came to London. It never occurred to me that I was supposed to have a working permit. But then the boat, they set up this thing where you have to go through this line, and so they can stamp your passport. So the two people in front of me, they said, I'm going junior year abroad, you know, and they said, you're in, you know, and stuff like that. And I'm like, I figured, I'll stay on junior year abroad too. So they say, junior year abroad? And, yeah, I'm going to school, you know, and they go, what school? What college? And that hadn't occurred to me, but luckily I had just read an article that Mick Jagger had gone to the London School of Economics. So I said, London School of Economics. And they said, oh, okay. But when I got to London finally the next day, the firm was very shocked because they had sent all this paperwork for me to do in order to get into the country. And so none of it ever got done. So then they said, and meanwhile on the boat, of course, they had lots of parties with this group, and so I spent most of my money, and so I really needed a job. And we got that straightened out. I kind of rented a room near where the office was, and then actually about 3 or 4 months later, I ran into some of the people that were on junior year abroad, and they said that, why don't you come with us and we'll get a bigger place and stuff like that. So anyways, it was pretty interesting at time in London. One of the places they rented was an abandoned consulate of one of these African countries. So we had these huge rooms and stuff, and you know, there was like 4 or 5 of us, and the heating wasn't so good and stuff like that, but it was a good place to have parties. Also in London, I went to this office Christmas party with one of the British guys there, and he had told this newspaper writer that I was American, and I found out that later that she was the music critic for the newspaper. So she comes up to me and asks me if I can go to this concert with her to this private concert to see this new American singer, so that I could give her some insight on what it was about. So we go to this party about a week later, and it's in someone's basement, about half the size of this room, and I'm like, God, that looks like Mick Jagger. Oh, that looks like John Lennon. And she's like, shut up. You know, this is her job. So the singer comes out, and who is he? Making his initial appearance in England, but Jimi Hendrix. So he's singing, "Are You Experienced?" And, you know, I had been at that point like out of the U.S. for about 2.5 years, and I had never seen a black person with, you know, Craig's haircuts and stuff like that. And, you know, because it was his introduction to the press, he was, you know, playing behind his back and between his legs, all sorts of stuff like that. And, of course, they get outside and she's asking me, well, now can you give me some insight on this? And I'm like, no, no. I was still stunned. So, we don't need that one. After London, it was San Francisco. I remember, well, that's too long a story, but anyway, I was able to go back to the U.S., which I wasn't able to for a while, and that was one of the reasons why I was in London. I went back because one of my brothers was getting married, and because of this other incident, I lost my job. So I go back, and I'm only there one day, and, you know, I went to the wedding, but I'm like, I got to get out away from these people again. And so this is 1968, so I find out one of my friends from college has a drive-away car thing, which you take the car and drive it to some person, you know, in California or some other part of the country. So, and the one brother, Harry, had by then was living in Los Angeles. So again, it was just like this impulsive thing, you know, okay, we can get the car, the lady wants it in Los Angeles, how about, you know, we get the car, we go to San Francisco, you take the car, I knew one person there, slept on the floor for a week, but eventually got a job, and that job actually went on for like 3 years, but it was building the Bank of America building in San Francisco. The firm I worked for was a local firm, but they joined with this other firm, Skidmore & Merrill, which is a big firm in different cities and stuff like that. But I worked a lot of overtime there, so I had money when the project was finished. So I go to figure, oh, I should go to Italy. Don't ask me why, I can't remember. But then I learned that you can buy like a Volkswagen or a car in Europe. You order it, and then you fly to Germany to get the car and drive it around, and they ship it back for free. So then I'm like, oh, this sounds good. So it's what they don't tell you, you get to Germany and the new cars, you know, there's like 20 people, and they come down the spiral, but they're having the champagne and everything else. And it was like about two blocks away is the Autobahn. So, of course, you know, free champagne and, oh, that's my new car, you know. And the Autobahn, which I think, what, the minimum speed is 80 or something. It's that highway that goes across Germany. So, anyways, but by the time I got back after 3 weeks in Italy on the Amalfi Coast, because the project was over, they sent me back to my firm, the local firm, and they didn't have anything for me to do there. But the people at Skidmore said, well, if you can get to New York City, you can work in the office there. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I think I left within 2 days. Of course, my car was still on the boat. I mean, I would do these things and not really think it through, I guess. So, again, slept on the floor of someone I had worked with in San Francisco. So he and his wife were always fighting, so then I got a room, and the only place I had hotel I had ever heard of was the Chelsea Hotel, and that was an interesting, because it was a hotel, but some of the rooms were apartments too. But the New York office was much more business than the San Francisco office, and you had to wear a shirt and tie and all that kind of stuff. And at that point, all I had was Jerry Guest beard. So it was like, it wasn't a bad fit. this went on for about 35 years, moving to other cities, getting jobs, losing jobs, and stuff like that. But one thing that did happen in New York, well, two things. One night I was coming back on the train from Greenwich Village to the Upper West Side, where I lived, and I looked the wrong way at this gang of guys who were on the train, on the subway train, and so then I saw them staring at me, and then I thought, oh, I better go move to a different car. So I moved to the next car back. Then next thing I know, they moved to the next car back, and I'm like, what am I going to do now? And so then what happens is I finally get to the last car, but I see that I'm almost to the 72nd Street station. So I get up and run up, and I'm not sure that they're not following me. So when I get upstairs where Central Park West is, there's like this about a 42-inch stone wall along there, and I would go to that park all the time with my son, so I knew, okay, maybe if I jump there and hide in the bushes, they won't see me. I'll wait until the train pulls out. What I didn't know, because we're at the station on the other side, it went down about 15 feet because it was a great intake grate to get air into the subway station. So I dislocated my shoulder, broke my nose, and at that time I was teaching at this design school, and when you break your nose, you get two black eyes, so like this raccoon. All right. It was just all these kind of things started happening, and things started going downhill. Then I remember about 10 days later or so, wake up hungover, I knocked the Yellow Pages off the counter while I'm trying to make some coffee, and I look down, and it's the first thing is AA down there in bold letters. And I'm like, what's that? So I think, boy, maybe there's something wrong with this picture. So I figured I would call them up. And so they call them, they call up and they say, where do you live and stuff. Then I'm like, oh, I can't go in my neighborhood, someone's going to see me. Well, I didn't even know what AA did, actually. So, but then they're like, where do you live? You know, I tell them, I'm on 74th Street. And they're like, oh, on 68th Street, there's this meeting, you should just go to that one. And I'm like, okay. So I go down the next night, but there's this new bar on the corner, so I go in there and I have a couple of shots of whiskey or something to get up the courage to go to the meetings. And of course, by the third one, my fourth one, oh, you don't need to go there. And it turns out there is one the next night also. I find out. And so, again, I go down, repeat the same thing. I go in there, have a couple of drinks, and by then, and I can see the door to the meeting over. At the last minute, there's probably 10 minutes left in the meeting, I go in and they get to get up and say the serenity prayer, and I don't know, I immediately knew I belonged there. So then, next thing happens is, well, at that point I didn't know, I thought AA was the place that you went to get some tips on rather than, you know, 4-6 packs a night, maybe they trained you how to do one or two, you know. That's what I thought it was about, training for drinkers. So, wrong. But I started going to speaker meetings and one night the speaker, and I'm like, why is this guy so familiar? Then I realized after the meeting that he was one of the other teachers at the school where I taught. Although his, you know, when I had been there about 4 years, but his classroom was on the floor below me, and so we never even saw each other. So I'm like, so he became my first sponsor and kind of, you know, told me what AA was really about and stuff like that. So the so then I decided, okay, well, I'll start cutting back and, you know, get it down to 1-6 packs and a couple of things. And also, meanwhile, I had these flasks of Blackberry brandy, I remember, because in the apartment building had a dog, so you could only use the fire stairs, but in the fire stairs with those hose racks, so I had stuff in there, and in bushes, there's probably still stuff in these bushes on the upper west side of Manhattan. And oh yeah, I'll take the dog out. And then about maybe 2 months later, two of the other teachers at the school were getting married and stuff, just in their apartment, and they invited me over, and I said, should I be going? But I was still drinking a little, so I thought, all right, I'll just go. And I said, they opened the door and gave me a glass of champagne. And I'm like, oh, well, this is a good way to stop. This will be my last drink. And so I had the glass of champagne, and it turned out it was my last drink. And not that it was all easy after that, but as some of you know, 2 weeks ago it was 33 years. I did. I'm looking for. I did write a thing of life. difference like now? Well, it is a lot different now. I don't do things as impulsively. I got sober in New York, but then I moved to Philadelphia for about 13 years before Madison. And I did get sober. I remember I was out of work a lot and stuff like that, but I was pissed about that at first, but then I found out, oh, you can go to, you know, noontime meetings and stuff like that, and that actually really helped me, you know, having a crowd every day at noon, actually on the West Side Y, and you know, like 62nd Street, and then, well, by then I was also married, well, that's another whole story, of course. What did I learn? You're always attracted to people in a college family. So, you know, eventually it doesn't work, but on the other hand, we are friends again, because we share this granddaughter, and she also lives in the same town my son lives in Virginia, so when I go down there. I did this card, what is it like now? Well, first thing I have on here, I know where I will be sleeping tonight. when I connect the dots, I know that I have been and still are being taken care of by my higher power, because all this getting in different countries and all sorts of other things. One thing I've learned is to stop controlling others and start caring for myself. Until the alcohol is gone, you won't be able to learn to live and love, but you can make good choices, because we need to lose things to make room for the things you really need. That was one thing I found out, and also that once the alcohol is gone out of your system, there's all sorts of your criteria for what is fun changes and what is meaningful to you. That's I guess what I also learned. So with that, I'll close.